for the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Thank you. Good evening. Thanks very much. Good evening. On tonight's show, we'll be looking at a revolutionary reform proposed for the legal system whereby death disqualifies someone from becoming a High Court judge.
And also later, Elvis Presley says, "Look, I'm dead honest." But first, you've probably noticed the popularity of TV programmes featuring audiences composed entirely of celebrities, such as An Evening with Barry Humphries, An Evening with Victoria Wood, and the less successful An Evening with Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, we've actually got an audience of celebrities in tonight.
That's right. I can see Jeffrey Archer with his wife, Mary, Billy Connolly with his wife, Pamela Stevenson, Cecil Parkinson with his niece, Sue Pollard, Janet Street Porter, and... Hey, Andy, is that Frank Boff?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Frank! You old devil!
Nice one, Frank. Take the nun's costume off. Now, of course, in the TV shows with celebrity audiences, every joke is followed by a shot of a celebrity guffawing in a totally natural way. Now, obviously, this visual effect is hard to achieve on radio, but we're going to try using a commentator to tell you exactly which celebrity is laughing.
Yeah, allow me to illustrate. Later, we'll be looking at the Whitbread Literature Prize for the year's best work of fiction, which has been awarded to Lester Piggott for his annual tax return.
And Jan Leeming and Russell Grant are laughing at that, but Ken Dodd isn't.
So that's the rough idea how the commentary will work, OK?
Now, the other fashionable area in comedy programmes these days is to do without a script and rely totally on improvisation.
And Jeffrey Archer is laughing at that. For no particular reason, he just wants the publicity.
Now we'd like members of the celebrity audience to shout out suggestions for a scene that Andy and I can act out.
Yes, any scene will do, an everyday activity or historical event. Yes, Reverend Paisley.
The Battle of the Boyne!
The Battle of the Boyne, right. Well, that's a historical event. Yes, what about an everyday activity? Anyone?
Stoning Catholics!
Stoning Catholics, right. Yes, any others? Anyone at all?
Shouting!
Yes, perhaps if someone else could have a go, Reverend. Yes, at the back there, Jackie Collins, an everyday activity.
Writing a book.
Jackie's everyday activity, writing a book, though. Obviously, that wouldn't take up a whole day, so... Nick, you choose. It's between the Battle of the Boyne, right. Stoning Catholics, shouting, mm-hmm. and writing a book.
Stoning Catholics.
You've gone for the easy one.
Yeah. Okay.
And Ian Paisley's laughing at that, and digging Cardinal Hume in the ribs.
Now, we need some styles to act it out in. Yes, Sir John Gielgud.
As Lady Mud Wrestlers.
And Cecil Parkinson is smiling at that.
OK, Frank Bruner.
As Japanese No Theatre Harry.
Right, yes. And Rupert Everett.
As if you were pieces of wood.
Right. One from the heart from Rupert there, so... OK, Nick, so it's Stoning Catholics in right. the style of Lady Mud Wrestlers, mm-hmm. as Japanese No Theatre or as pieces of wood.
Right. No one said in the style of Emlyn Hughes, then.
No.
I knew this had happened, Andy. Someone's bound to go for Emlyn Hughes, you said, but I knew they wouldn't. I told you.
Yeah, don't worry, it'd be OK. Let's do Japanese No Theatre, OK?
You
ready? Ha! Oh, aki ato taki na ho.
Yohi, hai tachi, awa mitsu obisi sumo.
Nagasaki, Kyoto, Tokyo, Fujiyama, Hirohito. Oh, look, here comes Emryn Hughes.
Well, Desmond, the boys have done great. They've gone out there and they've said, let's stone these Catholics, and they've gone out there and they've stoned them, and I'm well pleased for the lads, you know, it's fantastic.
There, you see, piece of cake, this improvisation stuff.
Yes, as simple as Vinnie Jones.
And the whole celebrity audience is laughing at that, except for Vinnie Jones, who we didn't know was there, and who's now advancing rapidly towards the stage, muttering obscenities. Well, while we're waiting for Andy, Nick and Vinnie to return, let's go live to Olympia for the final day of Crufts.
I hate being a bulldog.
Me too.
I'm a specially bred bulldog, you know.
Yeah, me too.
What I hate most about being specially bred is all the petty irritations, you know, like not being able to breathe.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, there's poor old George.
Oh, dear.
His owner's got tired of him never winning the bulldog section, so they've sawn his legs off, painted him brown and entered him as a sausage dog.
That's showbiz.
Yeah, yeah.
Had any good bitches recently?
Nah, well, it's not easy to pull when you look like this, is it?
Nah.
We're not exactly the Cary Grants of the canine world, are we? I nearly had a poodle yesterday.
Yeah?
But no. My owner yanked me away and smacked me on the nose with a rolled-up newspaper. I got me own back, though.
How?
Well, I waited till him and his wife were, you know, hard at it, and then I ran into the bedroom and smacked him on the nose with a rolled-up newspaper.
How did he take it?
Not very well, really. No. Got no sense of irony, humans, have they? How about you? Had any good bitches recently?
Are you trying to be funny?
Oh, sorry, I forgot. Has it changed your personality at all? The way they say, I mean, do you find you've mellowed?
Would you mellow if someone chopped your ghoulies off?
No, I don't suppose I would.
Still, got me own back in the obedience section.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
That was funny. Humans get so embarrassed when you start rogering their leg, don't they?
You didn't do very well in the obedience section either, did you?
Well, I can't understand it. I got 0 points from every judge. Can't fathom it.
Yeah. You know, I think your owner was telling you to sit.
Oh, that explains it, yeah. Not my fault, though, is it, if he's got a speech impediment?
Right. I mean,
so stupid, humans. Do you know they still haven't worked out that a Pekingese isn't a dog?
Well, what is a Pekingese, then?
Well, it's a rat with social pretensions, isn't it? The rats just grow their hair long, stick a pink bow on their heads and affect an oriental yap. And the humans fall for it.
Here, I know. They're announcing the result.
And the winner of the best bulldog is Mr. R. Sims with Rufus.
Oh, well, that's 8 years I've been entered without success.
Your owner doesn't look too pleased.
No, I don't like the look of that.
What?
The way he's looking at my legs and fingering his toolbox.
Bit of a handyman, is he?
He's into DIY, botch it yourself. Oh, well, see you next year, I expect.
Yeah, see you next year.
You should be able to spot me. I'll be the only badly painted sausage dog with 4 unevenly sawn legs.
Well, we leave Crufts there, as I'm pleased to say we can now rejoin the Million Pound Radio Show.
Welcome back, listeners. We're sorry about that little problem with Vinnie Jones.
Yeah, we managed to sedate him with a large haunch of drugged raw meat.
Anyway, we're very privileged now to be able to present the world premiere of Samuel Beckett's latest play. And wasn't that brilliant?
Later, how to tell if there's too much aluminium in your water. Basically, if it clanks when you drink it, there's too much. But first, we have with us a very, very special guest, because with me now is Mrs. Gladys Roberts.
Hey, up, chop.
Now, Gladys, you have a rather special claim to fame.
You mean apart from having the largest knockers in Lincolnshire?
No, I didn't mean that, actually.
Look at those whoppers, eh? Make Dolly Parton look like an ironing board.
No, I meant your special claim to fame, which is that you are, in fact, Mrs. Thatcher's sister.
That's right. I'm old Frosty Nicker's elder sister.
Yeah. Yes, you're quite different from her, aren't you?
I love. I'm much better in bed.
Yes, now when Mrs. Thatcher talks about her family, it's funny because she hardly ever seems to mention you.
She never mentions me.
Well, why do you think that is?
No idea, love. It's a nice little bum you've got there. Sometimes I wonder if she might be ashamed of me.
Really?
Well, she did invite me to a diplomatic reception once, but I drank a bit too much pink gin and told Menachem Begin the one about the rabbi and the nymphomaniac. I've not been invited back since.
No. What was Mrs. Thatcher like as a girl?
Oh, she was a funny girl. Very odd.
Yes, did she do sort of normal girlish things?
Not really, no. She did join the Brownies. I think it was the brown shirt that attracted her to it.
Yeah. Now, was she a good brownie? I mean, did she help old ladies across the road?
No. She helped old ladies into the road. Then she just kind of leave them there.
What about boys?
Oh, she was a fruity wench as a lass. She used to knock about with the boys who took the money on the dodgems. But then I don't know. Something seemed to put her off boys when she was about 20.
And then she met Dennis.
Yeah, that was probably it.
Now, what attracted her to Dennis?
Well, she liked his company. In fact, she liked all his companies. But to begin with, you know, between you, me and the gatepost, Dennis found the marriage very difficult. See, Margaret's so competitive. She always insists on coming first.
Yes, I'd heard that. Now,
sorry, Chuck, I just can't resist a juicy body like yours. In fact, I said as much once to Menachem Begin.
Yes, thank you, Gladys. Gladys Roberts there. In fact, we've some news just in about your sister, because there are rumours that Mrs. Thatcher has intervened personally on the question of the proposed route for the Channel Tunnel after the latest plans show it passing through Neil Kinnock's living room. You all right, Nick? You seem a bit distracted.
Hmm? Yeah, I'm sorry, Andy. I've had a really emotional week, actually. See, I've never told you this before, but my mum and dad, well, they're not actually my real parents.
I knew it. You're the result of an experiment that went wrong at Porton Down.
No, Andy, I'm being serious. I'm adopted.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick.
Well, this week I experienced a rather emotional reconciliation.
Yes?
Mrs. Joan Bailey?
Yes. Do I know you?
I'm Nick Revel. I'm your son. I've spent ages tracking you down. Mum?
Son! Oh, I'm sorry, son. I'm sorry I sent you away.
It's okay, I understand. You had me adopted to give me the start in life you felt you couldn't give me. You were young and scared.
No. No, it wasn't like that. It's important you know and understand. When you were born, I just couldn't cope. I couldn't handle it. You see, I gave you away. I gave you away because you were an incredibly ugly baby.
Sorry, Mama. I don't understand.
You were indescribably ugly.
Lots of babies are ugly.
I know, my darling, but you were hideous. The midwife who delivered you went into shock and never spoke again. When I put you up for adoption, the Adoption Society specified that the foster parents had to be blind. But that's all in the past now. You've grown into a fine man. Oh, my son. My son, Nick.
Well, it's my foster parents named me Nick. What name did you give me?
Well, the vicar christened you Peter. Peter David. My God, this is the ugliest one I've ever seen.
Oh, I see. And Dad?
Gone. He left me shortly after you were born. 30 seconds after you were born. Well, let's not rake over the past. We're together now. That's all that matters.
Yeah, but I've changed, haven't I? I mean, I'm not horribly ugly anymore, am I?
No. No, of course not, my darling. You've got a face that's nice. And interesting.
Thanks, Mum.
Of course, you know I'm remarried. I've got kids. Your stepbrothers and sisters.
Can I come in and meet them?
Of course. One thing, though, Nick. Before you meet them, you wouldn't mind putting this paper bag over your head.
I'm sorry, Nick. That must have been a bit of an ordeal for you.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Mm.
Still, you can see your mother's point of view, can't you?
How do you mean?
Well, it's the nose, isn't it?
What's wrong with my nose?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just there's a lot of it, isn't it?
Actually, Andy, if you must know, a lot of women have remarked on how much they like my nose.
Well, I bet it gives them something to shelter under if it rains.
Well, I'm not going to stand here and listen to this nosiest humour. You can
carry on your own.
Well, while Nick goes off to audition for the role of Cyrano de Bergerac, it's time for another in our award-winning documentary series, Interesting Pieces of Ground. Well, I'm standing in the middle of Salisbury Plain, overlooking the mighty monoliths of Stonehenge. And with me is Cordelia Mitchell, Professor of Archaeology at York University. Cordelia, what is Stonehenge?
Stonehenge is a fascinating place. It's a sort of prehistoric equivalent of neighbours, really.
In what way?
Well, you stare at Stonehenge for hours on end and you think, why? Why did anyone make this?
Yes, I can see that, yes. Now, of course, many theories have been postulated about Stonehenge, haven't they?
Yeah.
Historians have suggested that it's a place of druidic worship. Scientists have suggested it represents an amazing solar clock. And, of course, most recently, Nicholas Ridley has suggested knocking it down and building a motorway.
That's right. But it seems generally accepted that the huge stones were quarried hundreds of miles away in Wales.
All right.
How they were transported to Salisbury Plain is yet another part of the mystery. Were they floated down the river on huge rafts, or were they carried 400 miles by drunken pre-Roman medical students for a joke?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, given the nature of the Welsh, it's not impossible that the living rock simply upped and moved away of its own accord in search of more interesting conversation. Mm-hmm.
Well, listeners, now I'm over by the perimeter fence with Constable Harris. Now, Constable Harris, you're an officer with the Wiltshire Constabulary, a local lad. What is Stonehenge to you?
Well, it's that big pile of stones over there.
Yes, but what do you think about Stonehenge?
What do I think? I'm a police officer. Are you taking the mickey?
Well, let me put it another way. What does Stonehenge mean to you culturally?
You are taking the mickey!
Turning away from Constable Harris, because he's obviously very thick, Brinsley Schwartz, you're a developer, and I understand your property company is very keen to buy Stonehenge.
That's right.
So will you be knocking down Stonehenge?
Oh, no way. Stonehenge is going to be the centerpiece of the whole shopping arcade. Then there's a theme park where we have the historical pageant reenactments. Ancient Britons do battle with the Romans. Peace Convoy does battle with the police. And then there's the theme pub, Druids, where customers take off their clothes and have group sex.
Should be a winner.
Well, next week on Interesting Pieces of Ground, Andy will be investigating two more places from myth and legend. He'll be attempting to establish the true site of Camelot and the place where an English tennis player last won a set. Oh, charming, Andy. Go to sleep.
Sorry, Nick, I didn't mean to yawn. I just didn't get much sleep last night.
What, the baby's keeping you up, not sleeping?
Yeah. I got up in the middle of the night, you know, to see what Miriam Stoppard has to say about why babies don't sleep.
What, you read the book?
No, I rang her up. About 3 a.m.-ish it was, yeah. Mm-hmm. She didn't seem very pleased, actually.
Really? No.
Especially when I sort of held the baby up to the phone so she could hear exactly what sort of screaming it was.
Yeah.
She just kept shouting, "Look in my book!" And I said I had, and I tried all the suggestions in there. And did she have any more suggestions?
And did she?
Well, she had one.
What was that, then?
Well, it involved my head and a dead bear. Uh-huh. But I've done a bit more research, and apparently there are only two surefire ways to make a baby go to sleep, right? One is to use drugs, and the other is to take it to watch Arsenal. And I don't like to do that, really. I mean, the scientists just aren't sure how badly watching Arsenal can impair your mental development. And we've got some traffic news. We've a message for all motorists using the M25. You're mad.
It's funny, actually, because I was reading some very interesting statistics about the M25 the other day, you know. Did you know it's the only motorway in the world where you use the handbrake more than fourth gear?
Really?
It's also the only motorway in the world where hedgehogs can cross in safety.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I've seen hedgehogs sitting in the fast lane, sort of taunting the driver.
As they run past.
Now, there's been a lot of concern recently over the safety of the skies above England, and there's anxiety about our air traffic control system. With me, I have the junior minister responsible for this area, Richard Tapscott. Minister, how do you assess our air traffic control system?
Well, it's not satisfactory. Mm. It's expensive and unreliable. The pilots aren't satisfied, the public aren't satisfied, we're not satisfied. So we're going to introduce a new, more user-responsive, more up-to-date system.
Well, that's very reassuring. Now, how will this new system work?
Like this. If a pilot is unhappy with the directions he's receiving from air traffic control, he can, quite simply, opt out.
Opt out?
That's correct. The pilot will be given the right to opt out of air traffic control system and land on the runway of his choice. As a government, we believe in deregulation and the right to choose. I mean, why should a pilot be told which runway to land on if he prefers the look of another runway? We mustn't nanny pilots.
Yeah, I take your point, but couldn't this lead to several planes trying to land all on the same runway?
And why not, if that's the best runway? Let's go for excellence. Sweep away these artificial quotas. This one plane, one runway business is yesterday's news.
Yeah, but surely pilots will crash.
The bad pilots will crash. That will raise the average quality of the pilots and thus benefit the customer.
Right, well, thank you, Minister, for explaining that to us. Yes. Next week, the Minister for Transport on how he intends introducing choice at roundabouts.
And now, the latest in our series of Tales of the Impossible. This week, Episode 3 of The Day Truth Broke Out.
I remember so clearly how it started, the day that everyone started telling the truth. My girlfriend, Sally, was an actress. After her opening night in Harvey Proctor's new knockabout farce, Confessions of a Disciplinarian, we all went to eat in a famous West End restaurant.
What do you think about the farce?
You were awful.
Thank you, darling. What? How dare you? What does your opinion count for anyway?
It's not my opinion. I was listening to the audience in the interval. I couldn't believe I was saying all this, but the words just kept tumbling out of my mouth. I couldn't control it. And Vivian, your agent, thought you were awful as well.
She told me it was the best performance I'd ever given.
Yeah, she said that too. I knew I was upsetting Sally, and I didn't want to. Not that I cared about her that much, but she was great in bed, and I didn't want her to go home in a huff. When we got back to my flat, Sally went upstairs while I checked the answer phone.
Hello, Mr. Jenkins. It's the garage here. Just to say, when you bring in the car for a service tomorrow, we won't actually be doing anything to it. We'll pretend we have, so we can charge you lots of labour, and then we'll charge you for lots of parts we haven't fitted. Bye.
I went up to join Sally in bed.
Don't turn the light on.
Why?
I want to pretend you're someone else.
The shock hit me. This apparent urge everyone had to tell the truth had even affected Sally. It must be serious. She was an inveterate liar. Even when I'd caught her in bed once with my best friend, she'd insisted that all his clothes had been blown off by a freak blizzard. And that she'd only got into bed with him to save him dying from exposure. We made love, passionately. Was it good for you too?
No worse than usual.
Next morning, I staggered out of bed to get ready for work. I poured some coffee and turned on the radio.
And here are the headlines. Rupert Murdoch says Sky TV is rubbish. We're a dead loss, says Paddy Ashton. Yes, I am the spawn of Satan, says Bonnie Langford.
I turned off the radio and got on a bus for work. I paid my fare after calling back the conductor to point out that my bus pass had expired. You too. As I got off the bus, I sidestepped a policeman who was telling the driver of a BMW he'd only stopped him because he couldn't bear seeing black people in expensive cars. A group of religious fanatics marched past, carrying sandwich boards with the message, "The end of the world might possibly be nigh. We hope so because we like being miserable." It was all too much. Work was my last hope. Surely they wouldn't have succumbed to this epidemic of truth at work. I entered the advertising agency and went to my office. But worse was to come. My boss burst in, threw his toupee into the waste paper bin, and sat down.
Ah, Jenkins, here's the new slogan for the washing powder campaign. New foam. A washing powder just the same as any other, and nothing remotely new about it. How's that? I'm a mason, by the way.
Suddenly the phone rang.
Alan, it's Sally. I'm so scared, Alan. Everyone's telling the truth. Have you seen the headline in today's Standard? It's a fair cop, says Kurt Waldheim. Oh, Alan, I need someone brave, someone strong, but you'll do. Please come over.
I hailed a cab and listened to the cabbie's monologue as I tried to make sense of this explosion of truthfulness.
Of course, sir, in my opinion, Gov, they should arm the police, bring back the death penalty, and shoot the unemployed. It's the only way.
Suddenly, the chilling realisation hit me. Cab drivers actually believe all that bullshit they spout. Sally was waiting for me at the door. We rushed into each other's arms.
Oh, Alan, thank heavens. I'm so frightened. No one can lie. Michael Parkinson has just revealed he was actually born in Surrey.
It's all right, darling. I'm here now, and it's all going to be okay. Because I love you, Sally.
I love you too.
We stared into each other's eyes joyfully. We both realised, I think, at the same moment, just how much those three little words meant. I love you. Society was being torn apart, but two people could still say, I love you, and not mean it. We were still capable of lying. Perhaps the only two people in the entire world who were. The world was at our feet.
Oh, Alan, I do love you.
Do you really?
Of course not, I'm lying.
Thank God for that.
Join us next week when the truth epidemic gets out of control and it's revealed that Lord Lucan has been hiding for 10 years in the West Ham United forward line. In the final episode of The Day Truth Broke Out.
Thank you. That's it for this week, actually. Next week, why is Mrs. Thatcher turning green? Is it because her mother was a crocodile?
And why is Dennis Thatcher turning green? Was it that last pint of Chartreuse? Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacob. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.